We want to talk about three steps to peace. And as we think about taking steps toward peace, of course, we've got this big treasure map up here, and you know, if you go from over here all the way over to the... that's going to take a lot more than three steps, isn't it? That's most journeys, most searches for treasure of any kind, something that's valuable, it takes a lot of time, doesn't it? The cheap, flimsy, fall-apart-in-a-day kind of thing is easy. You can get that at the Dollar Tree and it falls apart. I don't know how many broken toys we've got at the house that were bought one day and broken in about 30 minutes. Some of them were broken before we got home with them. But that's what happens when you get to go the easy route and get the cheap thing. But if you buy something of quality, if you want something of true value, it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a hardship. It's going to be difficult to get that. And the fact of the matter is, peace is something that's worth having. It's valuable. And because of that, it's difficult to obtain. If it was easy, well, everybody would be at peace all the time. But the fact of the matter is, as odd as it may seem, fussing and fighting and strife, that's the easy thing. Now, people that are in the middle of fussing and fighting, no, this is hard. It's horrible. I can't stand this. Well, the fact of the matter is, you took the easy road, and it led you to these fussing and fighting and the difficulties that you're facing, because we have to take the harder road if we want to get away from that and get out of that kind of conflict that we have. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 14, this is our theme verse for this week. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Now, I think probably the construction of that indicates that the holiness is the thing that you will not be able to see the Lord without. But with that conjunction "and" there, it kind of makes you wonder. Do we have to follow peace in order to see the Lord, in order to go to heaven? Are we going to have to follow peace? Well, to some degree, we certainly are. Now, are we always going to have peace? No. Did Jesus follow peace? Well, sure he did. He was a man of peace. Does that mean he found peace in his life on this earth? Well, not with other men, did he? Now, of course, this lesson is focusing on following peace with all men. Of course, we could spend time talking about finding peace with God. That's a valuable thing, probably more so than finding peace with your fellow man. But we want to focus today on finding peace with men, and we have to follow that. Galatians chapter 5 and verses 22 through 25, Paul says that the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts, and if we live by the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. So he tells us there that peace is one of the things that's going to be produced in our life. If you see someone, and I know all of us know people like this, I hope we're not people like this, but we all know people like this, someone who everywhere they go, they've got to cause a fight, they've got to cause a stir, they've got to cause trouble and make waves just because they like it, I guess. But everywhere they go, they're insulting people, they're saying rude things, they're doing all sorts of things. They're bossing everybody else around, telling them how they have to live and pushing them this way and that way. And they're just full of conflict and strife. Those folks are not walking according to the Spirit. They're not walking in the Spirit. That is not the fruit that the Spirit produces in our lives. Now, all of us, no matter how hard we try, we're going to have conflict in our lives. We're going to have conflict with other people. We're going to disagree about things. But I remember one of my teachers used to say, you know, you can disagree without being disagreeable. And we're capable of that if we'll walk in the Spirit. We can have a discussion where we have opposite opinions or opposite point of view and still not get to the point where we're yelling and screaming and fussing and fighting with each other. We can do that. But Jesus certainly understands, probably more than anyone else, that no matter how hard you try to be at peace with others, there will be some people who don't want peace. David talked about that. He talked about, you know, we think of David, he was a warrior king. He was fighting constantly throughout his entire reign as king. Well, even before he began reigning as king. But he says in one of the Psalms, I wanted peace. I didn't want to fight, but they wanted to fight with me. And you see that time and again with Saul, for example. David didn't want to fight with King Saul. He wanted to serve King Saul and be a good soldier in his army and be a good servant to him, play his music for him, all those. He wanted to be a good subject to the king. But what did Saul want? He wanted to kill David. And tried time and time again, hunted him down, trying to kill him. Also in Psalm 34 and verse 14, one of the things that it says there is, depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. As we think about peace, so many times the thought of peace, we think of somebody laid back, lazy almost. Nothing going on, nothing happening, everything calm and quiet. That doesn't fit very well with seek and pursue. You see, we think of peace as being a passive thing, something that just kind of happens. But as we said earlier, that's not the case. What naturally happens, what just happens if you don't do anything, is conflict and strife. Peace takes an effort. You've got to seek it. You've got to chase after it. You've got to pursue it. It takes an effort. It's not something that you can just sit back and wait for peace to come to you. It will not work that way. So then as we think about then these three steps. Step one, get the poisonous habits and attitudes out of your life. How much of our time do we spend trying to get other people to straighten their lives out compared with how much time we spend trying to get our lives straightened out? So many times in marriage counseling, this is the issue. Each partner is trying to fix the other one instead of turning their attention inwardly, and if they would just fix themselves, they'd make their marriage better. Even if the other person didn't, they'd still have a better marriage at the end than they had at the beginning. If one of them would even try to fix themselves instead of trying to fix the other person all the time. There are these poisonous habits and attitudes, negative things that destroy the ability we have to have peace. Let's just mention a few of them quickly. Hatred. Anger. I don't know why that didn't come up together. Grudges and bitterness. Envy. Jealousy. Evil thoughts. Divisive attitudes. Mistrust. Defensiveness. Selfishness and greed. All of these things. Guilt. Fear. Paranoia. Pride, conceit, and arrogance, deceit, doubt, impure motives, rebellion, and other sins as well. If we will clean some of the sin and these bad attitudes, these negative ways of behavior out of our lives, that's going to be the first step that's going to head us toward peace. You know, if you lie about everybody you know and gossip about them behind their back and all these kinds of things, it's going to be hard to have peace with those people when you're treating them like that, isn't it? Nobody likes being around you when you're like that. They're scared to even talk to you for fear of how you might twist something they said and turn it into something that destroys them. So we've got to get those negative things out of our lives. We've got to get rid of the poisonous habits and attitudes that are destroying any chance we have for peace. You know, it's like a lot of things. Like with farming or gardening. If all you've got is rocks, it's going to be hard to grow anything except maybe some moss if you keep it real wet. And grow some moss on those rocks. That's about it. But if you really want to grow something, you're going to have to get the rocks out of there, aren't you? If you want to have a good garden or a good farm, you got to get the rocks out so you have good soil. Well, we've got to get, if we want to have peace in our lives, if we want peace to grow, we're going to have to get all the rocks out of our lives. We're going to have to get rid of all of these negative things that destroy the fertile ground or make it hard for anything good to grow. Then step two, we need to fill our life with healthy habits and attitudes, positive things. And so we'll just mention a few of these real quick. Truth, justice. In fact, one of my favorite scenes from a movie years ago, it was a president speaking to a group, and he said, "Peace is not." It's amazing. So every once in a while, somebody in Hollywood writes something that actually makes sense. But he said, "Peace is not just the absence of war, but the presence of justice." That's where real peace is, when things are right. And that's, of course, God talked about righteousness exalting a nation and those kinds of things. Justice is important. Righteousness and obedience, purity, praise and encouragement, patience, kindness, gentleness, love, meekness. These, of course, some of that fruit of the Spirit that's there mentioned with the peace. Hope, faith, and trust. You see, these are opposites of some of those other things. Before, you had fear and paranoia and distrust. Well, here now we've got faith and trust. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. When you trust somebody, are you going to be let down sometimes? I know that's never happened to any of us, where we trusted somebody and they abused us and took advantage of us because of it. Never happened to anybody, has it? Of course it has. When you trust someone, when you put your faith in somebody, you're running the risk that they will betray that trust and take advantage of you. But it's still better to keep trusting. Now, obviously, you may not trust that same person that took advantage of you, but just because somebody took advantage of you doesn't mean you distrust everybody. You just try to find somebody that's more trustworthy the next time. But you do those kinds of things, it's going to be better. You're going to have more peace than if you're constantly distrustful and always paranoid about everything and everyone. Humility and service and joy and pleasantness. These are some things that if we'll add these things into our life, if we'll fill up our life with these kinds of attitudes and habits, and again, yeah, I know I said it's just three steps, but these are two big steps. Get rid of all the bad stuff and add your life some of the good stuff. These are some big steps. Kind of like Neil Armstrong said, one giant leap for mankind kind of steps. These are huge. They're not easy. It's not baby steps. It's not something that, well, just anybody could have done that. It's hard work. And my dad used to say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. Any of you have somebody in your life that said things like that? If it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. But anything that's worth having is going to require you expending effort to get it. It's not just going to naturally fall in your lap. So we need to fill our lives with these healthy habits and attitudes. Put the positive things into our lives. And then the third, and this is perhaps even the biggest step of all. Step three, accept your responsibilities, obligations, and limitations in your relationships with others. And we're going to look now at some of those folks that we need to watch out for, or those that we need to take responsibility for certain things. We need to understand our limitations with other things. There's the old poem, "I tried to change the world," and basically nothing worked. It didn't happen. Nothing was done, and I wound up losing my family in the process. But then he turns it around and he says, "I wanted to change the world, so first I changed myself. And my influence on my family convinced them to change themselves. And then my family's influence helped our community to change itself. And our community helped our nation to change." And before long, I had changed the world. We sometimes go at things backwards. We try to go out there and change the world instead of starting where we have the most influence. Do you think I could call the president up and say, hey, you know, you really need to change some of these rules and regulations that you're... He's not even going to take my call. And if I tried to go to speak to him, they'd probably arrest me for you know, trespassing in the White House or something. He's not going to listen to me. But if I can change myself and be the kind of person that I ought to be, that should have an impact on those closest to me, that then encourages them to be the best that they can be, which then will encourage those that they know to be the best they can be. So instead of working from the outside in, we need to start on the inside and work out. The problem is, that takes time, and that takes effort. It takes work. And so many times in our society, we want something for nothing. We want the easy fix. I want to take the pill that's going to help me lose 100 pounds in a week. And it doesn't exist. I guess they say if I chop my legs off, that'd lose me about 50 pounds probably. But then I wouldn't have any legs. That wouldn't be good. That won't work. Probably the best way, I could just chop my head off and that'd just kill the whole problem, wouldn't it? But the fact of the matter is, we look for the easy way out. We look for the quick fix. God doesn't work on a microwave time schedule. He's a slow cooker. He takes time to get things right. But it takes time to get things right. So let's look at a few of these folks that we need to consider our responsibilities, our obligations, and our limitations in these relationships. First, let's think about self. 1 Timothy 4, 15 and 16. Meditate upon these things. Give yourself wholly to them, that your profiting may appear to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this you will both save yourself and those that hear you. See, again, you take care of yourself first. That's what Paul tells Timothy. You want to be successful? Fix yourself first. There's a book called Boundaries by Dr. Henry Cloud that probably, if folks would read and apply a lot of the things in that book, it's kind of like with the Bible. People would just apply the things that are in there. But he talks a great deal about this idea of responsibility and obligations and your limitations and of setting boundaries with other people so that they don't control you. You control you. You be the kind of person you want to be. How many times do we say that, oh, so-and-so just made me so mad? Really? Why would you give that person that much power over you? And yet we all do it from time to time. There is always somebody in our lives that can say the right thing or wrong thing, do the right thing, do the wrong thing. They know how to push our buttons and we just, oh, we lose control. And then afterwards we're like thinking to ourselves, what happened? Why did I let that person make me so mad? And yet, we allow that time and again. If we'll set those boundaries so that we don't let another person's problems control our lives. We've got to beware of that. And it's an excellent book. Sometimes we'll have to study through some of the principles in there because they're biblical principles that are there about what the difference is between our responsibility to another person and what they want us to do. They're not the same thing. And they'll guilt you. Well, if you really cared about me, oh, you don't love me because you won't do this for me or that for me. No, I love you, and because of that, you do for yourself what you need to do. You need to take care of yourself. I'm taking care of what I have to take care of. But we do need to start with self. We have that responsibility to make ourselves responsible people, to be obedient and fulfill our obligations to ourselves first and foremost. How many of us promised ourselves we'd do something and then didn't do it? I know I have. Oh, tomorrow morning I'm going to get up early and I'm going to do this and this and this. Then the alarm goes off and I'm just going to hit the snooze one time or two times or five times. And an hour later, Oh, I'm getting up too late to do that thing I wanted to do. How often does something like that happen to you? Maybe not that exact thing, but something similar. Where you promised yourself or you had a plan for yourself and then you didn't follow through with it. Our parents, we have certain responsibility to them and obligations, but there are limitations. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. As we think about that, he puts that limitation on it, in the Lord. Children, if your parents tell you to kill somebody or steal something or beat somebody up or call somebody nasty names, you don't have to do that. God said don't act that way. Now, you may suffer some consequences from your parents. You may lose some peace with parents if you did that. Now, hopefully good parents aren't going to try to teach their children to do that. But you know there's some out there that do. We know that. We know there are some parents that actually teach their children to be wicked. And that's a sad thing, but it's true. What about your spouse? Ephesians 5, 22 through 28. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord. Verse 25 says, husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies, verse 28 says. We have a certain responsibilities to husband and wife. Probably deeper responsibilities to husband and wife than perhaps anyone else except for God and self. But if my spouse is not going to be a Christian, does that mean I said, well, I won't be one either then? No. That's going too far. That's going beyond my responsibility to my spouse to go along with that. Children, we certainly have responsibilities to our children. Ephesians 6, 4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, is that going to cause some strife sometimes? I don't know about you, but when I got whoopings, I didn't like it a whole lot. Caused some strife. Caused a little bit of anger sometimes. And sometimes I'd, want to blame my parents. Well, I was the one that did the wrong thing that got me into trouble. But I wanted to, it caused some peace problems for a little while. But you know what it developed in the long run? More peace. A better relationship. Between employer and employees, Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. Servants, be obedient to your masters. Of course, the masters have to remember, too, that they're going to have to answer to God as well. So they have to consider that and not abuse that power. Don't threaten them and misuse and abuse them. The government, Romans 13, 1 through 6, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. There's a rash of things with young people getting violently hurt by police officers. And somebody said, the solution to that? Well, when the policeman tells you to stop running, stop running. If the policeman tells you to get down, get down. If the policeman tells you to stop, stop. Just do what they tell you to do and they won't be getting, they won't be coming after you, beating you with the nightclub, zapping you with the taser, or shooting you if you'll be obedient, if you'll be in subjection to them. It'll help you have some peace in your life, so that you don't have to just rest in peace. What about our neighbors? Galatians 5, 13 and 14. Brethren, you've been called to liberty. Don't use liberty as an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word. Even this, love your neighbor as yourself. Sounds simple, but it's not, is it? These things really are quite simple to understand, but that doesn't make them easy. There's a difference in something being simple and being easy. We need to be mindful of our responsibilities toward all men, Galatians 6, 9 and 10. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially them that are of the household of faith. Of course, we have to define that good, don't we? If the drug addict comes wanting some money so he can go get his fix, are we being good to him if we give him that money so he can go get his drugs? No, we're not being good to him. That's not good. One of the things that Dr. Cloud talked about in his book was our misconception of the difference between hurt and harm. We think if something hurts, it's bad. But there are some things that hurt but they don't harm us. There are some things that don't hurt, but they do harm us. And he likened it to going to the dentist and having a cavity when you go to the dentist. And the dentist poking around in there and he hits that cavity. Whoa, that hurts. Did the dentist harm you? No, the dentist didn't harm you. He found the problem. And so then what's he going to have to do? He's going to have to give you a shot. And then he's going to have to drill in there. And then he's going to have to fill it. And your face is going to be all numb for about half a day. And there's going to be pain. It's going to hurt. Did the dentist harm you? No, he helped you. But it hurt. Yeah, and you know, when you're eating that candy and sweets and things that gave you the cavity, that didn't hurt at the time, did it? It tasted good and you felt good, and then, but it caused the harm. You see, sometimes something that doesn't hurt causes harm. But something that hurts actually does good. It helps. It doesn't harm. And sometimes, though, we have this mixed up idea. We blame the dentist for the cavity. Dentist didn't cause the cavity. We did. By the bad things we ate. Or not brushing your teeth or whatever, you know, whatever reason you got that cavity was not the dentist's fault. Unless he's a really, really bad dentist and was telling you to do all those bad things that got you the cavity. But most dentists tell you, don't eat the sweets, brush your teeth, all those kind of things. But we need to do good to all men. And that will help us to have peace with them. And then toward Christians, obviously, 1 Thessalonians 5:13 through 15. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all men. See that none render evil for evil unto any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men. Now, sometimes following that which is good will cause you some strife. That's what happened with Jesus. He was following what was good. He wanted peace, but he didn't receive the peace he wanted. And then, of course, finally and foremost, peace with God. We have certain responsibilities toward God and obligations toward God that will help us to have peace with those others who want to have peace with Him. We will not be able to have peace as God's children, being responsible to Him. We will not be able to have peace with the devil's children. They won't allow it. If they would come on over and be God's children, we could have peace. As we conclude this, we need to ask you the question. Have you got peace in your life? Do you have peace with other people? If not, why not? Which one of these steps could you take to help you to have peace with others? We need to follow after peace. We need to seek it and pursue it, just like we're hunting for a treasure, because having peace in our lives is one of the greatest treasures that we can have here on this earth. It's more valuable than any amount of money. Somebody who's having strife and fussing and fighting in their life would pay every penny they have to get that out of their life if they only realized they could get that out of their life by following some of these principles that God teaches. But sometimes we have a misconception of peace. Peace doesn't mean to be in a place where there is no noise. We've had this pretty picture of the still pond with the little rocks sitting there, and well, that seems so peaceful. But peace is not being in a place where there's no noise, no trouble, and no work. It means being in the midst of those things and still being calm in your heart. Do you have peace in your life? If not, why not? If you need the prayers of the church to help obtain peace, if you're not at peace with God, perhaps it's because you've never obeyed His gospel to become His child in the first place. You can do that today and become a child of God and at least be at peace with Him. Even if it doesn't immediately bring you peace with everyone else, but it's a step in the right direction. You're starting with the most important relationship in your life, the one between you and God. If you are a Christian, but perhaps you haven't allowed the fruit of the Spirit, that fruit, peace, to be produced in your life, perhaps it's because you haven't followed one of these steps. If you have a need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.